Welcome to episode 44 of the Low Carb Universe Show. Today I'm not having a chat with Bitte, but instead I have a very special guest for you. He is a returning speaker of ours. He was there for both LCU at 17 and 18, and it is, of course, the eminent Dr. Eric Westman. I'm going to read you his biography quickly, just so that we are on the same page as we start this show. Dr. Eric Westman is co-founder and chief medical officer at HealCare, co-founder of Adapt Your Life, and associate professor of medicine at Duke University. He's board certified in internal and obesity medicine. His clinical research in obesity and diabetes includes more than 45 peer-reviewed articles. He's past chairman of the board of the Obesity Medicine Association. He's also a fellow of the Obesity Society and a co-editor of a medical textbook on obesity. He's author of New York Times bestseller The New Atkins for a New You. Welcome to the show, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on the show.
Of course, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise. I think I've fully recovered from Low Carb Universe in Mallorca. It was fantastic.
Thank you very much. I think I'm getting there too eventually, but you know, we'll see about that.
Well, I guess I should start on a positive note that's one of the highlights of my year, to be able to be in a beautiful place with a lot of people from Europe. I mean, it's a highlight. I go to a lot of conferences in the U.S., but the ability to go to Spain and the beautiful island of Mallorca with Low Carb Universe is truly a highlight. So thank you for that.
Thank you. You're going to make me cry. So as I was saying in your introduction, you had quite the background in clinical research and all these things. Why don't you tell us a little bit more? Because it's only a couple of sentences that I have from you. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about your background?
Well, sure. I guess the saying is time flies when you're having fun. or 20 years goes by pretty fast, however you want to look at it. But yeah, it turns out that it was in 1998, so now it's going about 20 years ago, when I was first introduced to the low-carb or keto diet, and it was through my patients. It was through two of my veterans there. I was a doctor at the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Durham, North Carolina, and I was doing research in smoking cessation. So I was trained as a clinical researcher, but I observed these two patients of mine doing this, crazy diet, eating steak and eggs and very little carbs, it turns out. And I was just curious about it and asked them what they did and then read a book about it. And I was concerned. I was skeptical, just like most doctors still are today. But for me, that was 20 years ago. And so we decided to look into the safety of it. And now, kind of in the 20-year view, or what my brother says about me is, oh yeah, that's my brother. He validated the low-carb keto diet, the Atkins diet.
That is a really good label to have.
Well, it wasn't just me. I mean, so even our group at Duke included Will Yancey, and Dr. Yancey is now director of the Duke Diet and Fitness Center at Duke. He's now the chair of one of the American Diabetes Association guideline committees on nutrition. And now the research has been done all around the world, basically saying that that crazy diet that we thought was crazy is actually a therapeutic diet and actually a healthy diet.
So who would have thought?
Full circle. I know. Well, there was this doctor in New York City, Dr. Atkins, who kind of knew it. Yeah. And Jackie Eberstein, who, still works with me today, who were doing it. So what happened to me was what happened to them. They were just seeing the results every day. And despite the criticism around them, it was the clinical result with their patients, the improvement that kept them going to work every day. And I have to say, that's happened to me. I enjoy getting up, going and seeing people get better. But, I thought that's what doctors were supposed to do.
Yeah, I think we all did.
the twist is doctors now in the last 50 years were taught nothing about nutrition. Yeah. And nutrition is the key. That's the answer. So it actually kind of makes sense that the current system isn't going to figure it out, because all the people in power and those positions weren't taught the extreme or, you know, critical importance of what you put in your mouth.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting question. I mean, you work a lot with residents and stuff like that, I know. And how much nutrition education do they actually, I mean, normal residents, not yours, but normal ones. How much do they actually get?
Zilch. None. Yeah. So even back when I was in school, I mean, now that's going back to the 1980s, in residency and medical school, we maybe got an hour, but nutrition is folded into biochemistry.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to get in the curriculum of any medical school. So I do have a internal medicine and residents come through my clinic now, because I'm still in the university system. So at Duke, the residents get exposed to the lifestyle medicine or keto medicine, if you will. But the medical students get very little exposure, although we did create a colleague of mine, Gerald Bowen, who is Canadian, but she went back to Canada, but she worked at Duke and said, we need an educational class for the students. And so she powered through it. It's actually hard to get these things going. And she created it and then passed it along to me. And so we've had a medical school elective where students can spend a month learning about nutrition and about various obesity medicine programs, we call them, but keto medicine or LCHF or just nutritional approaches are a big part of it. And so the student this month who is on the rotation is a very, very intelligent MD, PhD kind of guy. He worked in brown fat for his research and realizes now that it doesn't have a whole lot of clinical application. No. So the researchers are off in this far field when the clinical doctors have known how to fix it, you know. Well, since Dr. Atkins, you know, since 1863, when William Banting first talked about it. So it just comes into focus that the medical medication-based medicine isn't going to figure this out.
Yeah.
And yet education is important, but I think we counted in the obesity medicine world. I'm a past president of the Obesity Medicine Association. We think there are 10 medical school electives in the U.S. that teach students about obesity medicine and nutrition and even medication. So we got a long way to go in the educational world.
Definitely.
Doctors.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I agree. I do have certain personal experience from doctors and the medical field as a patient. And not once has anyone talked to me how much I can do with nutrition, for example. So I'm very, very happy to hear and to see all these fantastic advancements that we are coming, well, not close. We're coming sort of closer to a circle of what actually I think, and I assume kind of that you are of a similar opinion, where medicine should be. It's not the pill pushing, it is the lifestyle and it is the food and it is the movement and all of these things that you can do maybe in addition to medicine, but not only based on medical medicine.
Yeah, well, probably the most precise way to say it is that the chronic non-infectious diseases of the modern era are all lifestyle based and are a result of the mismatch of lifestyle with genetics, if you want to say that. So, I mean, to say that simply is, yeah, food and drink really matter. But, you know, even that food and drink is more important than exercise. Yeah. And that's often surprising to people, because we've come through an era where all the doctors and researchers thought that exercise would fix everything. And, you know, I have to think in the U.S., all the people who exercise naturally have moved to Colorado and California. And so, you know, that's where all the research comes out saying exercise is great, because the people who naturally exercise have all moved there. And, you know, I'm in North Carolina, where the in the South, where it gets hot and, you know, it's not a cultural thing to go out and exercise. And so anyway, diet is the most important thing. In fact, you know, I dream of a medical school or a osteopathic school or a nutrition school starting out on the first day, having, you know, the dean come and say, what you put in your mouth, the food and drink, is the most important thing. In fact, they could coin the term or the phrase from Hippocrates, you know, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. So, you know, it's really nothing new. And you hit the nail on the head. It's the medication approach that gets doctors focused on pills and products. I'll just explain it simply that, oh, you know, that your doctor, well, he or she doesn't know about it because they just weren't trained in it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of the happy way to say, oh, no, don't blame them. But on the other hand, there is a lot of, you might even say ignorance about lifestyle.
And there's so much more research out now, of course, not only on ketogenic diets, but, you know, how much lifestyle can improve a different and many and definitely a vast majority of health conditions. So it's surprising to me that most doctors still sort of have an eye shut towards new and groundbreaking, although it's old really, but research. Yeah.
Well, you know, to that point, there was a taboo, meaning nobody really could study a high fat diet in the 1980s and 1990s. And it was actually the same month in 2002 when an article by Jeff Volek and an article by my team came out, Westman and Yancey, and that broke a 20-year taboo on studying the high-fat diet.
That's so
insane. If you went through medical school and training in the 1990s, you would not have heard anything about it, because even if you were up on the literature, there was nothing in the literature.
Yeah.
So now we're in the crazy phenomenon of 20 years of science. You know, the evidence for a low carb keto diet is as strong as for the evidence for a drug, if it was required, but it's not required. And so people are in their little silos, almost like car salesmen, salespeople about, you know, my approach. And when they don't even talk about someone else's approach. So we're in this strange world of, well, it's almost like a false choice and dichotomy between this and yours and this. And you know, no, that's not scientific. It's more like we have so many different ways to, we have a lot of different kind of cars that work, you know, you wouldn't say Volvo doesn't work. You'd say it's kind of, you know, frumpy and it's not as fast as mine, but
exactly.
You wouldn't say it doesn't drive, you know? So to have in the nutrition world, the dietitian or diet world and medical world saying, oh, that doesn't work, is just, it's more a promotional issue than a scientific issue. And it's important to see that. And in fact, I wanted to be sure to mention the very interesting research that Belinda and Gary Fechte did, where the religious influence into the dietary guidelines is actually kind of, they brag about how they've been able to influence things toward a vegetarian sort of lifestyle, anti-meat. And so that's not scientific. It actually was based in the church, which now throws another element into it that's not scientific. So it's not just I'm selling my own car or my own diet. It's now it's a religion about in proselytization of you should, you know, pray to my God and eat my food. Anyway, that's why it gets so confusing so fast, I think.
It really, really does. And because we were both there at Low Carb Universe now in November when Belinda and Gary presented these findings, it was mind-blowing. And I just looked at the audience sitting there. And seriously, there were so many jaws that were sort of in the basement because no one could actually believe that this has been allowed to go on, that this has been okayed to go on when, you know, real food, real fantastic protein, rich animal products are then being more and more banned, or not banned, but they're more and more looked away from for
shunned.
Health reasons. Yeah, exactly.
It's
for health
more
reasons.
Of a religious shunning rather than a scientific unhealthy, but it gets cloaked in the pseudoscience, right?
Yeah,
you know, the very small, if any, association of meat with cancer, processed meats, gets overblown into this, oh, no one should ever eat meat, you know.
Yeah.
And so, they've done a great job. But, you know, that was the third time I heard that talk about the influence of the Seventh-day Adventist religion and the dietary guidelines. Yeah. And so it's, you have to hear it over and over because of that first, you know, deer in the headlight look that I remember that. It's just kind of, did this really happen? You know, is this happening now, really?
Yeah.
So the transparency of that is really important, to just know where the information comes from. And, you know, my training as a medical researcher, well, physician, doctor first, and then clinical researcher, is that we really should be based on the science, not the politics, the religion, the industry, that sort of thing. And, you know, it's hard to get that message out.
Yeah, it really is. And I also think, fine, you know, there's so many, there are thousands of ways of eating and living your life. But I also think it's so important, as at least for the people that I've been working with in the past, is to find what really works for the individual. And I don't think that either vegans or keto people can say, you know, this is the solution for everything. This is the panacea. This will heal everything. Right. But I think you really have to find what works for you and what you can live with the best.
Yeah, and you know, that's an interesting, maybe it's just human nature to think there's one size fits all, because the low-fat diet, which
exactly,
was
I was just going to say that,
was promoted as the one size fits all for all, you know, the wrong non-scientific reasons, and it's created the largest diabetes obesity epidemic ever seen. I mean, you know, so we have to be really careful about being single-minded, everyone has to do this, and or preaching one way. I agree that there are a lot of ways to do this. It just turns out keto is really effective. So
for a lot of things,
really,
yeah,
it's really easy. And you know, the hallmark of a low carb LCHF or a keto level LCHF is that the hunger goes away.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm struck, you know, every day I'm still in a university clinical practice 4 days a week, work days. And the difference between this kind of approach and others that people tell me over and over is they're just not hungry.
Yeah.
So if you're fraught with hunger if something doesn't work, even if you think it's healthy, this is an excellent way to go. But then, you know, just being open to the idea that what you eat can be a problem. I've seen people be taught lifestyles that are not keto and they gain 100 pounds, but they don't ever suspect that the diet was the cause of it.
Exactly.
Because they were told the diet's healthy and, you know, so it must be the, you know, a little bacteria in the gut that's doing it or something. It couldn't be, you know, the food.
You know? Definitely so, not. Definitely
kind of like fruit, you know, fruit. What do you mean I can't have fruit? Everyone says it's healthy. Well, when you're trying to lose weight and trying to avoid sugar, you can't have fruit,
Yeah.
maybe berries a little bit, but you know, when you're at your goal, when you're at maintenance for just the healthy, you know, population, non-diabetic, you can reincorporate that kind of stuff. And that's another, it seems like we need to know in the keto world what the non-keto people are telling as the kind of disinformation so that we can counteract that. Because you can eat fruit one day, but, you know, not if you're trying to lose weight as fast as you can without hunger.
Well, it's incredibly counterproductive, if nothing else. But this is what we're trying to do, of course. And you did, we have mentioned a couple of times now our events where you have been part of it twice, both LCU 17 and LCU 18. So you are a returning speaker, and we're super, super proud of that and very, very happy and honored that you wanted to come back to us on this last event. So how about, just switching focus a little bit, what are your experiences from the LCU events so far?
The specific venue of where LCU is creates an atmosphere really unlike any other. So that, again, that's why I really enjoy going to it. You actually have time to sit down and have dinner and meals with people. You can go for a walk and chat. So the connection that I really like is meeting people who are, you know, super excited about keto. They're not necessarily doctors or speakers. So it's a great mix. So what I've heard from other folks is that they they like going to it because they're able to spend time with people like me, of course, other speakers as well. But
hard to get by otherwise.
it's impossible to get. You know, really, if you go to one of the other keto conferences, it's so busy, and sometimes speakers just come and go. Right. Yeah, so if you don't catch them walking away from the podium on the way to their taxi or Uber or Lyft, you know, that you'll miss them. So that's really nice. So if an individual wanted to, you know, really sit down with some of these speakers, and so you'd get a chance to speak to the Fetkes, you know, that, so they came from Australia, you get to speak with people from Sweden, from Switzerland, you know, the European, from England, the UK, the connection to the international community for me is really important there. And of course, the speakers are top notch. I'm glad to be one of them, and I'm glad you think that you want me there still. It's always a pleasure. More and more, the type of talks are more consumer friendly. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
So that, it's gone from, you know, the real geeky biochemist going to talking about something to someone like the ketogenic girl who talks about chemistry, but in a way that it's understandable.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And that's I think this is the way we can sort of reach more people as well, because if we keep staying very geeky, I love the geeky stuff too, but if we keep staying on that one track lane sort of thing, we're going to lose people very quickly.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if you've noticed that the people are they coming for different reasons to conferences like LCU, or still it's kind of people have already started. And my sense is that there's a curiosity among people who haven't started yet. So, you know, I think it's important we get outside of our echo chamber of just talking to the same speakers, the same people coming to the conferences. My sense is that there are more and more new people coming in as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's important.
And there's a huge, at our events, I can't really speak for any others because I don't know who's actually attending them. But at our events, it's a good mix of people. Some of them are just starting, and because of the food that we provide, we can you can use it as a kickstart, or they have been going for a while, but they're like, is this really the right thing? Blah blah blah, all of this stuff. Or then they're diehard keto fans that are really really far along in their journey, and they have healed numerous things and everything through food, and they just want to be part of the community. So yeah, it's a big mix.
Yeah, well, it's exciting to see it grow, and so one of the reasons I go to that specific venue is to have the time to chat, to be approachable, I'm glad you've been able to create that. You know, it's almost time, I think, for a resort like that to actually have a week where people could go as a low carb retreat, where food is the focus, not just the lectures. But there is a program here in Durham, the Duke Diet and Fitness Center, and Will Yancey is the director. And often people will come here for 2 weeks, for 4 weeks. And he actually did start a low carb program 2 years ago.
But that's incredible.
It's not for everyone. I think there are 50 people at a time who've moved, to Durham, North Carolina, and in the South, but I'm not aware of any other, resort or hotel that does this for a retreat. I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to help that happen. Now you have a connection to the island there,
yes,
as I understand, and that's how you got onto the Puerto de Soller is the venue.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, it's actually Obita's fault.
Oh, okay.
She's been going to Mallorca since, I think, about 99, and she has a lot of connections on the island. So that's how we got got to know about the hotel. And it is a very well-established hotel on the island, and they're very popular during summer times and stuff like that. So it's a well-known place.
Yeah, well, that seems like one of the perfect places to do a program where people would come specifically to learn and to do the diet, right? Yeah. Because you have, it's small enough, you could actually influence the kitchen and then day trips to, other places on the island. What a gorgeous spot. I mean, even then, this last time I had a chance to visit the spot in a monastery where Frederick Chopin spent a winter. Actually, it was kind of a dreary winter, and he came out with all of these very, passionate, melodic, romantic, and depressing songs. But it was like a childhood dream of mine to one day visit, because I grew up playing piano and playing all those songs. So there's a lot of historic and just beautiful scenery on the island as well.
That's a great idea for a niche, and I'm happy you got to make that childhood dream happen.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, actually, they hire someone to play some Chopin for us, like once or twice a day, and that was very inspiring. I'm back to practicing more often.
With your busy schedule, I can imagine that is not an easy feat.
Well, it's hard to fit it all in, as you know.
Speaking of niched events, thank you for that idea, though. I will take it and I will talk to the hotel and actually make it happen one day. But now we will focus on our next niche event. As some of you may know, we have the second edition of Keto Ladies coming up in March, which is a niched event focusing on women's health from a low-carb perspective. But we didn't feel like that was enough, so we're adding an event called Diabetes Dot, which is all about diabetes. And as it happens, Dr. Eric Westman is one of our very amazing speakers at that event as well, because of his, because of your background in research regarding type 2.
Well, I think this is going to be fantastic. It's time to have a conference just devoted to diabetes. And what I've seen is that each conference kind of smatters in different areas. You might have a lecture on diabetes, a lecture on obesity, and all these different things, on cancer and all that. And so it's fantastic to focus on diabetes. And, I'm thinking it's not just type 2, of course, Anna, type 1 as well.
Yeah.
I was just made aware that the survey through Type 1 Grit that got into the journal Pediatrics is the number one article in the journal Pediatrics for 2018.
Yeah, that's amazing news.
It was fantastic. So, that article in Type 1 started as a survey by one of our endocrine fellows at Duke, Annabeth Barton. And it went so well, David Ludwig and his group said, hey, let's do it again, but let's buff up the methods and call the doctors and all that. And it was sufficient to get into one of the best journals in pediatrics. And what's happening, it's like the tail wagging the dog, if you will. The people are doing this. And now this is awesome, because it's happening in so many other areas. And now academia has to wake up to that. Well, I'm hoping they'll wake up and start studying it. But that was fantastic. So with type 2s, I've been, after researching the LCHF for about 8 years, we opened the lifestyle medicine at Duke, Lifestyle Medicine Clinic. And so I'll treat people with type 1 and type 2 diabetes. And, kind of like my bread and butter clinical patient is an internal medicine specialist has type 2 diabetes and hypertension and obesity and heartburn and arthritis, and all of these things get better. The fundamental understanding that type 2 diabetes is a result of the carbs, not just the weight, not just the the food in general. It's from carbohydrates. And so I think, to the extent that we can keep hammering that away, it turns out that the carbohydrates are the root cause of obesity as well.
Yeah.
It's almost like the medical mainstream doesn't understand the root cause of diabetes type 2. They just think it needs medicine.
Yeah.
And the hazard
with everything else.
Yeah. Well, the hazard is then you will have diabetes forever.
Yeah.
Because you'll never be able to get off the
medication. And that's how it's sold too.
Yeah. Well, right. And you don't have to have diabetes forever. I wonder, there should be a specific lecture, maybe even the Fixing Dad movie producers. Exactly. They wrote that movie Fixing Dad because the idea that what you're being told by your doctors that it's incurable type 2 diabetes, that is, and that you have to be, it's lifelong, you'll never get off. That's just not true.
Yeah.
It's just not true. And I've tried to be in the mainstream as much as I can. I don't like to doctor bash, but it's really hard for me now to not doctor bash.
I can't imagine.
So I just present it like there is another way. You don't have to be on medicine. You don't have to have diabetes. And, but the first time someone hears that, it's like that deer in the headlight look.
Yeah,
you see,
again.
Can this be? I mean, I've been told something else for so long.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is exciting that you're putting on the conference on diabetes. And this will be in Sweden, I understand.
Yes, a completely new location. So let's hope they live up to the expectations.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
Gosh, if you handpicked the location, kind of like the hotel in Mallorca, I'm sure it's going to be wonderful.
We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Hotel Esplendido.
That's what it's called.
Word. Yeah.
Speaking of expectations, what are your expectations for the diabetes event?
Well, so when I come to these events, I like to share the experience and give lectures on what I know, but I go to learn. Every time I've gone to, and I've gone to most of the keto events over the last 2 years now, I learned from the new speakers, the personal stories, so as I learn how to be a teacher of this to other people, I learn a lot. By having people give their testimonials, even just the dinner conversations of how people have been affected. And there's a growing number of people who are getting involved to make change. Yeah. And, that's a grassroots change. I really want to encourage everyone to get involved in a little bit in some way, because that's how it's changing. It's not going to come from the top down. Like the medical people saying I was wrong, just don't eat carbs.
That's going to take a lot.
Yeah. So, I'm endlessly optimistic, as you know. And
I know.
But as Gary Fetke said, it only takes 3%. Well, as he learned, it only takes 3% of the fish to turn the school of the fish up, while a whale might take a few minutes to change direction. Yeah. So I'm still encouraged. I think it was sardines. Is that the kind of fish, 3%?
Probably. Sounds about right.
But I guess I have to be really energetic fish to turn the whole school. Or anyway, I was just trying to work that metaphor to death. But I like that. I mean, and their enthusiasm after what they've been through, so I get energized when I meet Professor Noakes, when I meet Gary Fetke, and learn how to, get through the establishment if they start to say no, or you can't do this because they've been put through the ringer. And I always like to come back to Sweden, where actually LCHF began. I've never met Annika Dahlquist. I'd like to meet her. Of course, she was one of the first doctors who was put on, I don't know how to say it, probation or was looked into. But then when the government looked at the data, they said, well, no, actually, there's data to support what she does. But of course, I'm sure there'll be folks who are from Sweden. I hope folks who are from Sweden will populate your conference in a big way.
I hope too.
won't have to go very far. And so I go to learn still.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but that's a beautiful thing, and I think that has a lot to do with. I don't remember which of the speakers at LCU18 brought it up, but when you think you know everything, and then you come back to the whole point that I know nothing, and that's when you actually know that you're quite far along the information track, so to speak.
Yeah, so I'm at that stage where I realize how little I really know.
Yeah, exactly.
I've come off that curve, but on the other hand, what we've learned so far is so effective and so helpful to so many people. That's what keeps us going, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
for sure. So let's move on to something that is very, very important for both yourself and for the future of diabetes patients, pre-diabetes patients, obesity patients, overweight patients, all of these people. How about we talk a little bit about the Heal Diabetes Clinics? Because I know you are, of course, a co-founder of them, and you are heavily invested in them. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about the concept there? You know, for who is it? Where is it? Stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I was convinced by some business folks to, they sat me down and said, you know, Dr. Westman, how many people have you treated over the last, you know, 10 years at Duke? And we calculated it, and you know, it's about 8 years, and you know, I treated 5,000 people. Wow. And they said, that's great, but how many people need this? And I sat back for a moment. I thought, well, millions.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, how are you going to be able to accomplish that? Well, by publishing papers, by, and they said, well, you've done that, haven't you? You know, 2002, 2004, 2006, 2008, all of these papers. And how has that changed things? And I looked at them and said, it hasn't. And so they said, so the clinic is fantastic. You're working pretty hard. Yeah, I'm working really hard. And you know, how many people have come to learn from you? And I said, well, people have come from Australia, from Europe, from South Africa, from Canada. And only one from Duke has ever come to my clinic.
That's incredible.
And so they just got me thinking, and you know, business people tend to be grandiose, but because you can accomplish huge things with the scaling up of business. So it took me, you know, a few years of mulling this over. Is this really what I want to do? I'm a doctor. I'm a scientist, a clinical researcher. But I've done grants and application. I understand that process, but I didn't understand, and I'm still learning about how to scale up business.
Yeah.
And so the HEAL clinics, HEAL Diabetes Clinics, or we call it HEAL Care as the method, HEAL Care, is a way to scale up the availability of this information for people at a distance if they don't have a medical issue, but also setting up clinics so that if someone does have medication treatment for diabetes and all these other conditions, they can get the same care that they would have gotten if they had seen me. But now we have, you know, hundreds of practitioners who are trained first in the US, then all around the world. And then, you know, that's one way we can start treating thousands of people. You know, maybe tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. You know, it's almost like we have to create our own health system to treat the scale of people that need it. Or you can think of a revolving door where the medical world puts them on medicine and we take them off, and then they go on medicine and take them off. But so I was convinced, and now the business model is actually, we don't set up our own clinics and own them. What we do is we go inside someone else's office and rent the space, and so that the doctor gets the care of their patients by HEAL Care, the HEAL clinic, so that we've now, glad to say, signed on several large medical clinics that there are a few people who see the value of it, and they've convinced their leaders that this is a good thing to try and to do. And so what happens is the medical community sends all of their patients to the HEAL clinic, so you don't even have to advertise.
That's
so you
amazing.
Put it in the right place. It would be like putting a Starbucks or a coffee shop in a Target or Walmart, so that the Target doesn't have to make the coffee, but they know if people want coffee, they'll come to Target more, right? So there's a dynamic there where the HEAL clinics takes care of people, fixes the diabetes, takes them off medications, gets all of the benefits of LCHF, and then the health system there benefits because they spend less money on their patients. The patients live longer, they're happier. So it's a win-win situation. Now, you know, we've been at it honing the business model and honing the model home. And we've now come up, we think, with the scalable strategy. And then we've all offered an ability for an individual to help it's not really a Kickstarter. It's actually called a crowdfunding equity offering, where you can buy
That's
stock.
That's an incredible long name.
Company. Well, yeah. Basically, well, Kickstarter or even, you know, Keto Fest, they've done, you know, you buy it early and then if enough people buy, we'll have the conference. It's not like that.
Yeah.
You're actually buying stock in the company, but it's not the amount of money you would think you need to buy stock in something. It's with as little as $480 US, you can actually buy stock and make sure that this company is on solid ground to be able to have people get the treatment of a keto diet, basically all around the world eventually. Mm. Now, you know, in the US. So what I hear from people getting involved is they're saying, you know, I've have a good response from the keto diet. I want to make sure other people have that available without having to go through all of the research I had to do to find it on my own. Yeah. Or they'll say, you know, my mom lives in, you know, California. I can't be there. I want a heal clinic in California.
Yeah.
And so that's why they're getting involved at investing in the company, actually buying stock in the company. So, you know, if the dream comes true, or when it comes true, I think it's just a matter of time, then you actually get a return on your investment. It's not like you're just sending away money for charity. So, you know, now we've talked to some really, we call them angel investors, and they're, a lot of them are interested in, but many of them don't want a return on their investment. It's really kind of crazy.
Wow.
Some people are in the position, if you can imagine, they have so much money, they don't want to be perceived to be making money from their money.
Wow. I can't imagine, but I know the type.
I know. Well, but so it just kind of makes sense because the grassroots movement has to fund this.
Yeah.
Because when you get to that really upper echelon, they're not interested in that, the grassroots stuff. I don't fully understand why someone wouldn't want to support this, but it has I guess if you have so much money, you want to be careful where it goes because someone might say, ah, you're just trying to make money when they already made money.
Yeah.
Sonia, it's a chance for us, you know, the average Joe. I mean, we're all above average, I think, but someone who doesn't have a whole lot of means to actually get involved and give back and support the Heal Clinic's cause, which is, you know, the delusion is to fix and reverse type 2 diabetes and obesity, which is at epidemic levels.
I don't think it's a delusion. I think you're quite well on your way, but of course you need help. You can't do it all alone. So this investment is actually quite the amazing opportunity, and it's very generous.
I've never been involved in a crowdfunding equity kind of campaign like this. It's as little as $480, and so I've invested through this mechanism, let alone the last years of my life. But you can actually put it on your credit card. You can invest and with a credit card, and you can watch the money go up on the account as time goes on. And so in the first 20 days or so, we've raised over $200,000.
That's incredible.
Of people getting involved, which the average, I'm learning, the average a company makes $7,000 on a Kickstarter or crowdfunding. So we're way above average. Because I know, one reason I started the business side is that people kept asking me. They kept saying, on the low carb cruise, or you probably were one of them, Dr. Westman, why aren't you doing something? I said, well, I don't know how to do it. So now I have the team, we have the business model, and we're going for it.
Yeah, that's incredibly inspiring. And it's I can't wait to see where this will take you and where it will take Heal and where it will take better diabetes care, because that is of course one of the things that is very close to my heart. And I've seen that you've had some fantastic testimonials on why people have invested, and it almost some of them almost brought me to tears because they were so emotional, and so they're so personal. Invested and so personal, personally even affected by something that you can really help, and it needs to reach more people. So where can we find this if we feel like we want to splurge? Actually, this is something that we took up in our previous podcast last week as a great holiday gift idea for the person who has everything. You can make you can help them make the world a little bit better, actually.
Yes.
So where can we find it?
Well, it's pretty easy. You go to healclinics.com. So that's HEALCLINICS, HealClinics, all one word, .com/offering, OFFERING. Or if you just go to healclinics.com, you'll see at the top for investors, and you click on that and it'll take you to the page. And then, you know, it doesn't take much time. In fact, it's kind of scary how little time it takes, because basically you get to the credit card information and or however you want to do it. Now, if someone wants to invest in the company outside that mechanism, they should just contact me or the company, Richard Koffler, the CEO, or just the info at healclinics.com. Some people are wanting to do it outside that, or there's actually a limit that you can invest using the crowdfunding. We're still open to those kinds of investments as well. But thank you for mentioning it and being excited with me to bring this to more and more people who need it.
Yeah, and I think that's really the key. It is so many who need it, and that's why it's so important.
Hopefully it'll be a reality for more and more people. We have clinics now in North Carolina, in Virginia, and we're on the verge of, you know, many other states as well. And then after the U.S., we'll come to Europe, to Asia. You know, I consulted this year with the first keto clinic in China.
Wow.
Jackie and I went over, and there's great interest there. Of course, the diabetes and obesity is nowhere near the epidemic levels in the U.S., but they're seeing the trend there, and they don't want to go there. So it's not just a U.S. problem, right? I mean, you've traveled a bunch, and so this is the problem of too many sugars and refined carbs is worldwide, and the Heal Clinic's mission is to fix the diabetes and obesity problem caused by the bad lifestyle, bad nutrition.
Yeah, I love that cause, and that's why we're so happy to feature you everywhere.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being here with us today, Eric. And I can't wait to see where the future takes us.
Me too.
See you soon.
All right.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Anna. Bye-bye.